This is The Bookshelf from NHPR. I'm Peter Biello. Marlborough, New Hampshire poet Rebecca Kaiser Gibson's new book of poems, Opinel, is named after a knife designed in the late 19th century. And that seems like a fitting name for a collection full of poems that cut through the ordinary surface of things and get into what lies beneath. Gibson joins me now to talk about her poetry. Welcome to The Bookshelf.
Thank you.
So how did you come to name your book after this knife, the Opinel?
Well, it was a little bit accidental. It was sort of my first reason for naming it that was the sound of it. It just sounds wonderful, Opinel, especially if you don't, you know, really associate much with it. But the more I thought about naming it that way, the more I discovered it was right for my book. I realized finally that my book was in three parts, and the little knife has a wooden casing. The blade fits in the wooden casing, and then there's a hinge, and the blade opens out. So it seemed like my book was in three parts: the wooden casing of home, the hinge of moving out a little bit, and the blade of being out in the world and functioning. And suddenly all the poems fit in one of those three categories.
And I must confess that I did not see just by, I mean, I was reading the book just simply for the pleasure of the poems, but if you know that about the Opinel, it adds an extra layer.
Yeah, well, it added an extra layer for me too, because it taught me how to make the book, which was pretty wonderful. It was really, it feels like a sort of talisman name for me.
Well, we'd love to hear one of the poems from this book. Can you read a poem for us?
Sure. How about Useless Now? Victrolas, formica, mothballs and garment bags, ball gowns netted in silver thread, olive shoulders, cigarette fingers and opals, our report cards, locust shells, mammography, dinner menus scrawled in leather travel books, whiffs of Chesterfield tobacco flakes, hankies creased inside each purse, prescription specs in cases. She'd posed poolside in a two-piece snakeskin print, slouching ropey arms, and with local girls who scowled beside some cart with urns. She wore new suede jackets, Franc et Fils, her favorite. The French perfume has turned acidic. Mice have gnawed the leather gloves. She shed, or never knew, regret. When I lift the stiff, ripped cloth to finger the palomino leather I used to sit on to help her shut its bulging, mothballs scatter across the floor, scentless.
What inspired that one?
My mother and the attic. And
cleaning out her things? Or?
Yeah, all the things that seemed so important when we were growing up that lost their importance and faded. And the sort of shrinking of her, she was a pretty overpowering person, into these things that just didn't have that life anymore. And that I, at least for now, am living.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like even though it could sound like a mere list, it's more than that. At least it was to me when I was reading it. I mean, just the sound of those words together and the way they were arranged on the page. I know our listeners can't see that, but it seems like the emotion just was infused into this just by the order.
Is that
what you were going for, or am I way off base there?
Well, I that is what I was going for, but I was less conscious of it than maybe you were as you thought about it.
Well, it's so hard to figure out exactly what the reader's going to see.
Yeah.
When you're writing one of these poems.
There's lots of O's.
Sounds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Trollas, formica, mothballs, you know, lots of sort of mournful.
It's a mournful sound.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you about your time in India. You received a Fulbright Fellowship to teach in India, and you're also a teacher at Tufts. How does it compare teaching poetry in America and teaching poetry in India?
Well, I decided ahead of time that I was going to try to do exactly the same course that I do at Tufts to see what happened. And what happened was fascinating. I mean, partly even just talking to people, if I said I was teaching a poetry course, there was kind of what I thought was disbelief in their faces, because poets in general, in the general population, they're dead. They're someone you've memorized or heard about all your childhood life, and they're epic. They're huge. Contemporary poetry writing is just sort of mind-boggling as a concept for most of the people I talk to. And the way I saw it operate in the classroom was, well, first of all, the very first day, everyone in the room talked all at once. I had been told ahead of time, you have to, you know, people are trained not to speak in classes, so you're going to have to work hard to get conversation going. And the opposite experience happened to me. I had to slow them down because they were, each one was, they were completing each other's sentences. So it was like a group effort. And it took me a while to understand, oh, this is not just sort of a happenstantial. This is a frame of mind that is collective. They have collective, even though these were all engineering students by chance, they have a collective memory or information about the mythic poems of their own past. So when I'm trying in America, no problem with getting people to write about themselves. In fact, everyone is about individuation. You know, I'm different and this is me. Whereas there it was all about I'm part of something and I barely show. So the poems were much more sort of epic and historical, witnessing, caring for the traumas of India, and not about my life. So that was really interesting.
And you said that, you know, Indian students tended to complete each other's sentence. That suggests to me that there's a lot of listening to one another. Did you find that same level of listening in American classrooms?
I guess not exactly. People are busy trying to figure out what they want to say more than they are trying to respond or trying to complete someone else, to be part of someone else's thought. But they are, I mean, I have to say, my students, especially by the end of the semester, are incredibly supportive of each other, I've found, not competitive. But it is a different kind of listening. That's an interesting point.
So you're going to read at the New Hampshire Poetry Festival tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
What can we expect to see you do at the Poetry Festival?
I don't know. I'm going to surprise myself.
Well, Rebecca, thank you very much for speaking with me.
Thank you very much.
That's Rebecca Kaiser Gibson, author of the new collection of poetry, Opinel, and she'll be reading tomorrow morning at the New Hampshire Poetry Festival. You can find a list of the books on Rebecca's bookshelf and learn more about the Poetry Festival at nhpr.org. And we've been hearing recommendations from listeners like you. Beth from Loudoun, New Hampshire, wrote in to recommend Fahim Speaks, A Warrior Actor's Odyssey from Afghanistan to Hollywood and Back by Fahim Fosley and Michael Moffitt. She says Lieutenant Colonel Moffitt met Fosley in Afghanistan in 2010, where Fosley was serving as an interpreter and cultural advisor for the Marine Corps in Helmand Province. Fosley had temporarily given up a career in Hollywood to serve with the Marines as his way of giving back to the U.S. for giving him and his family a chance at a new life. She writes that while Moffitt was serving in the Marines, he became interested in helping Fosley to tell his story. She says it's an adventure story, a love story, and a hero's journey. Well, whether you've got an adventure story, a love story, or any kind of story to recommend, we want to hear it. Write to us with your name, your town, and why you think the book is so great. That email address is books@nhpr.org. This is The Bookshelf from NHPR. I'm Peter Biello. Thank you very much for listening.